welcome to minute 140 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again, the same guest I've had all week, which has been such a fascinating week and such a learning experience for me, even though I already know so much about this movie, but I've learned more about this movie because my guest is Stephen J. Rubin, author, screenwriter, producer, documentarian, and an all-around Great Escape expert. Welcome back to the show, Steve.
Thanks, Rob. You are a Great Escape genius.
Why would you say that?
Because you, not only do you appreciate the movie and know a great deal about it, but you've recognized it's the importance of documenting this film minute by minute, and that takes somebody with a great deal of brain power and genius.
Well, first of all, I have to give you a lot of credit also because, you know, you're the one who got me in touch with David McCollum, and I had that great interview with him that, you know, people heard a few months ago, but if they want to go back, they can listen to it again. Hopefully, you know, I'll be able to find other people connected to the movie that are still around that might be fascinating to talk to. We'll see how that goes. So minute 140 begins with Hiltz kicking the barn. Because yesterday we talked about him slapping the barn, but today he starts by kicking it and goes all the way till we get to see Kuntz as he's patiently waiting for the train. So basically, as we saw yesterday, Hiltz is trying to escape these different Germans that are chasing him through the German countryside. And he sort of hides behind the barn. He gives it a big slap and then he gives it a kick. So we were discussing yesterday what could possibly be the reason that he's slapping or would he slapping the barn. But I think your explanation of him making sure that it's not rotted wood that he's going to fall through makes more sense if he's going to be kicking it afterwards. You know, he doesn't trust the slap. You know, he's got to give him a slap and a kick.
No, absolutely. And
actually, when you see him kick it, you actually see part of the wood move.
Right. Right. This sequence is another example of Sturgis's mastery at doing action. Sturgis was an interesting director. If you've watched a lot of his films, he not only is great at casting them, but he seems to have a great instinct for when to shoot his actors in the action sequences. And I know a lot of this was shot second unit. Bob Relier had a camera crew that followed McQueen around to shoot a lot of the motorcycle stuff. But Sturgis came for these key moments, and there's a lot of tension here. For all we know, McQueen's going to pull out his gun, and he's going to start picking off these motorcycle riders, and he's going to die in a hail of bullets. But that doesn't happen here. I mean, they stretch it out, and it's just a really good sequence, and I think that once again, Bernstein's score really picking it up the tension moment, the use of the drum, just great moments.
Yeah, there's no question about that. The music adds so much to this scene, as we discussed earlier this week. The way that Bernstein's music accentuates the movie is just unbelievable, because it's able to give us a feeling sometimes of hope, sometimes of despair. Sometimes it raises the tension, it releases the tension. You know, it's all over the place from a certain perspective, but it helps the viewer get more of an understanding what they should be feeling for these characters at these particular moments.
Well, you know, the other thing also is that it illustrates how difficult it was to escape from this camp. I mean, there are guards and checkpoints everywhere. You know, the word got out that 76 officers escaped from Stalag III. As McQueen says it to McDonald and Bartlett at one point, every guy with a pitchfork is going to be coming after you. And indeed, that is the tension there is. It's no easy escape route. But by the way, I was hosting a screening of this movie at a West Los Angeles theater, and they asked me to introduce the movie, and I got booed at one point because I explained the fact that one of the problems that Sturgis had in selling this movie called The Great Escape
was that nobody escapes.
Nobody escapes. Now, obviously, that's not true. We have three people escaping in this movie. But I learned early on that when you're introducing a movie in a theater, with an audience you don't know, assume there are people who've never seen The Great Escape. So
that's why they booed you, because you gave away a spoiler.
I gave a spoiler, exactly. Now, I've done some hosting ever since. I've done a couple of Great Escape things. I am very careful not to give away any spoilers. Now, I've just made a huge assumption that everybody who's listening to your track has seen the movie 417 times, like I have. So
you've seen it 417 times?
Oh, probably at least that time. Many. I used to go to sleep to this movie before there was video, before there were DVDs. I used to make audio tapes of my favorite movies when I was in high school, and I would play them as I was going to sleep. So I've probably heard the soundtrack to The Great Escape probably 200 or 300 times, and I've probably seen the movie live probably 100 times.
Wow.
You know how?
Wow. No, I'm not there yet.
You know how when you're scrolling through the TV section on your screen to see what you want to watch, there are certain movies that if they're on, I'll always tune in on them. So if The Great Escape is on, I'm going to tune in on it. I mean, there's a few other movies like that. I'm a big fan of Clint Eastwood's movie Escape from Alcatraz, another escape movie that I find very mm-hmm. watchable. I'm always watching Tom Hanks in Castaway whenever he's in that. But I just adore that film.
That's also a movie with a great soundtrack.
Another great soundtrack, exactly.
I love the soundtrack of Castaway.
It's just, it's funny. Some people say, what are you, crazy seeing movie more than a few times? And I say, well, let me ask you a question. If you're in an art museum looking at a Rembrandt, and you look at the picture, which you've probably seen it many times, do people castigate you for looking at that Rembrandt? I mean, movies are like, to me, art. I mean, not only...
Yeah, but you're not going to sit and look at the Rembrandt for 3 hours.
That's true. That's very true. But I think that The Great Escape is pure cinema gold with a very high sheen.
Yeah. Yes. No question about that. Right. So we were talking about the fact that Hiltz kicks the barn, and we see the little bit of the wood move. And at this point, as you jumped the gun yesterday on, he removes his helmet and realizes that he probably shouldn't be wearing a German uniform. And then we see him looking at the road, and we see two motorcycles go by, and then we see two staff cars go by. Now, there were no cars chasing him before.
I think the word has gotten out. I mean, obviously the Germans are very, very determined to get these prisoners out. So that's not surprising to me that every police officer in this part of Germany is in the dragnet. So not surprising at all.
Yeah. Now, then we get another shot of McQueen where you see his hair sticking up. You'd think that McQueen would have actually complained about that one. That, he's got this alfalfa sprout happening in the background, in the back.
Yeah, I see it. I think McQueen, my impression of McQueen was he was not a vain actor. My sense is he liked to put on the sweatshirts. He liked to get dirty. He looks very uncomfortable in the Thomas Crown Affair in a suit. It just didn't befit him. You know, yes. He's a guy who wants to be, has some grease on his shirt as he's chasing somebody. I mean, Frank Bullitt, he's pretty gritty as Bullitt. I think Steve did not worry about how his hair looked most of the time. Now, that's obviously the job of the hairstylist on location. It is interesting to wonder if indeed they had hair and makeup people. They did with a second unit, because a lot of these shots were shot second unit. But I think this was not second unit because it's close-ups of McQueen. I think this is Sturgis with the main group.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we get to see him look out. He's holding the gun, and he looks out once again onto the road. And we get to see the motorcycle and the staff cars coming from a different angle, and we also get to see a cow. he could have made himself a steak on the way, And then he aims the gun at them and is getting ready to, as you mentioned yesterday, pick them off one by one.
See, they make left turn instead of coming to him, which is great. And, it is interesting that when he chucks the uniform, he obviously also chucked the gun. I think he got rid of anything German on him. You know, there were stories, I think they've been popularized, that if a German soldier found you with a captured German Luger on you, they would blow your brains out with it. And I don't know if that was apocryphal, but I think getting rid of all that vestiges of the German uniform were very good for McQueen's character. In this story, it saved his life.
Right. Well, and also, you know, we do have it would look very different if the iconic moment of him trying to jump over the fence, he was wearing a German uniform.
Right. Good point.
You know, I think it makes it more iconic, the fact that he's in casual wear. You know, he's got his sweatshirt and his khaki pants. So yeah, that's a great shot. And the crossroads here is very interesting. And when you look at it, you know, where the Germans turn off, you know, it makes you wonder why they thought that he was going in that direction. You know, because obviously he was speeding much faster than they were, so they couldn't see him, but they just automatically assume that that's the direction he went. I wonder if that's supposedly the direction to the border or whatever it is.
No, I think it was a little radio in the car saying, turn left.
It could be. Wait, this was Sturgis who said it, or the...
the assistant director, probably Jack Reddish. Obviously, just like we said about the not having the right papers at the check when he kicks the guard, obviously for dramatic purposes to continue this chase, they had to make some decision.
Yes, completely. Then the scene changes and we get to see a train station with a group of German soldiers sitting and waiting for this train to arrive.
And I believe this is once again Füssen, because I think Füssen was their main train station for the train sequences.
Right. But obviously they changed all of the various signs, because it actually says Erzingen or something like that.
Right, exactly.
And we get to see Kuhn, who is waiting for this train. Now, until I've seen this movie a lot of times, not as many as you. I've seen it at least 20, maybe 30 times over my lifetime. And I never realized until this time when I was preparing to do this podcast that Kuhn is the same guy that was there at the beginning of, when they brought Bartlett in. I never made that connection that it's the exact same Gestapo guy. I just always assumed it's another Gestapo guy. But paying close attention to these things, you're going to notice things that you didn't think about beforehand. So,
unlike the little guy with mustache with the valise clicking it shut, et cetera.
Priesen.
This guy actually looks like a Gestapo guy. And
yes.
And yeah, this sequence. How far are we going to take this sequence?
No, we see him, and that's it.
Oh, that's it. That's the end.
That's
of the sequence.
Okay. Next week, I'm gonna have the guest that you told me to get in touch with. He'll be on next week. I won't tell anyone who that is at this point. And he gets that next sequence that begins in the train station.
Oh, very, very good. Excellent. I will say this, that I'll save it for the next thing. That's
no,
good.
You can say whatever you want. Yeah, this is Friday. This is your ending of the week.
I was just going to say that since there are no women in this movie whatsoever, although there is a story, I think I read in an early draft, and maybe you too, because the original draft of The Great Escape I read showed where everybody came from. And Henley's character is in bed with a German girl, and basically they're frolicking before he gets captured by the Gestapo. But that went the hasta la bye-bye for obvious reasons. But apparently the publicity department or somebody in marketing, when Ashley Pitt falls on the railroad tracks and he's been shot, they want cradled by a German girl with ample breast cleavage. And I think Sturgis heard that in one ear and let it go out the other ear. But as we've talked about,
I think maybe Jill Ireland would have had a problem with that at that time.
Perhaps. Although Jill Ireland at that time was in the process.
She was still with.
Well, she was in the process of switching allegiances to Charles Bronson.
No, not yet. As David mentioned in his interview with me, they were still, together at that point.
It only happened
a few years later. I mean, this is the point where she met Charles Bronson. Yes.
Right. There was definitely a flirtation going on. But you're right. You're absolutely right. But, this is a unique movie. I mean, there are virtually no female characters in the whole movie, which is not surprising for a war movie. But Sturgis was very determined to keep the focus on this movie. In many ways, this is John Sturgis's masterwork. I mean, he's directed many great films over the years. One of my favorites of his is Gunfight at the OK Corral from 57. Obviously, The Magnificent Seven from 60. And Never So Few, where he first worked with McQueen in 59.
But I'm also a big fan of Marooned. I love what he did in Marooned.
Marooned is a very intense movie, interestingly, featuring Gene Hackman, who we talked about. Sturgis is, I think, one of the highlights of my film historian career was sitting in his office at Warner Brothers for 2.5 hours and him telling me about The Great Escape. And then this was for a book I was writing at the time called Combat Films American Realism, 1945 to 1970. And even though The Great Escape was not a combat film, I wanted to include a chapter in my book on The Great Escape because I heard so many interesting stories from Sturgis and the other people I interviewed. And it was fascinating. At that time I was interviewing Sturgis, he had a book on his desk, which became Das Boot. So my sense is at one time the filmmakers actually considered giving John Sturgis the film Das Boot, which of course was made by a German filmmaker. Probably more Wolfgang Petersen, exactly.
Wolfgang Petersen.
But Sturgis not only agreed to an interview, a sit-down with me for 2.5 hours, but when I finished my chapter on The Great Escape, I sent it to him, and he gave me annotated notes on what I was writing. So my chapter on The Great Escape in my book, Combat Films, is all based on exact facts and everything. And
What year was that that you had that interview with him?
That first edition came out in 81 from McFarlane, and then in 2010, I updated. I included 6 or 7 more films in the anthology, including Steve McQueen's The Sand Pebbles, another one of my favorite films of his.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
So now it's the book.
With Attenborough also.
Right. And now the book's called Combat Films, American Realism, 1945 to 2010.
Wow.
And that's available.
Is that still in print?
Yes, it's available through McFarlane.
Very fascinating. So anything else you want to talk about this movie?
Well, I think that future generations will appreciate this as being one of the cornerstones of World War II films. I think when you mention this film, you mention it as one of the greatest World War II films ever made. It certainly educated me on the stakes of the war and who the players were. And obviously introduced me to some actors who became very much my favorite actors. I mean, I'd seen Steve McQueen in The Magnificent Seven, but I think this is the movie that really kind of galvanized me as a dyed-in-the-wool McQueen fan. And then with Coburn, Bronson, McCallum, Attenborough, these are all just fun movies. I don't know if you mentioned it in one of your earlier minutes. I was told that the actor who plays von Luger,
okay, Hans Messner,
did not speak English, and that he had to learn all of his lines phonetically. And for somebody who didn't know English, his German and into English is pretty flawless. I found amazing. I thought he was really good. There is no false real note for me in the whole movie in terms of the performances, except for that little Gestapo guy with the mustache.
I mean, you mentioned right now. You just mentioned a whole bunch of different actors that were in this movie, and you know, over the week, we've been talking about you interviewing numerous members of the cast. Did you ever meet or interview either Attenborough or Bronson? Because those that you didn't mention.
Charles Bronson, like McQueen, did not do interviews. If you look at Charles Bronson during an interview, if there are any available on YouTube, he's really uncomfortable. I think this is a guy who did not know how to deal with press interviews at all. So it was impossible to get him. It's funny because I met a friend of his later on, and I probably could at least had the opportunity to perhaps at least entertain the thought, but he never got my request through other channels. Attenborough was in England. I guess I was just traveling at the wrong time to get to him. It would have been nice. One of the actors who I heard was considered for Bartlett at one time, Richard Harris.
I've heard that too.
Yeah, who has that kind of a brief moment in The Guns of Navarone 2 years before playing a British bomber pilot and has a moment. I didn't get to him, but I had And my partner on the Return to the Great Escape documentary, Deborah Goodwin, she got to Donald Pleasance in the south of France. And then I ended up interviewing James Garner and James Coburn, David.
Interesting. Wow. All right. Well, you want to say anything else about this movie before we end this week?
I think we've kind of discussed it. Obviously, you know, I'm a huge fan of this movie. I feel like it's one of my historical duties over the years to present as much behind-the-scenes information as possible, which I've gotten out there. If you haven't seen The Great Escape, you're in for a real treat.
Well, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, you're really in for a treat. You're getting a first-class, second-by-second, minute-by-minute overview of this movie. I'm not trying to discourage people from not watching the movie this way, but you should probably see it first before you dive into it minute-by-minute. Probably.
Yes.
But some people might want to do it otherwise. What can I tell you? Now, you mentioned that you feel that this is going to be... This will hopefully be considered the most iconic and World War II movie ever made. What do you think the message of this movie is?
I think that the message...
Is there a message? Or maybe is it fun movie?
I asked that question of Sturgis. And Sturgis pointed out an interesting memory he had when he was a documentary filmmaker in World War II Italy. He made one of the seminal documentaries of the war on the P-47 Thunderbolt fighter. He was attached to a documentary crew that was filming documentaries. And I guess he was sitting by the side of the road one day, or he was present, and somebody was directing traffic. It was a younger, probably an enlisted man. And what happened was a general drove up, almost like a Patton-type general, demanding the way to get through. And this private was telling him to back off, stay in place. And Sturgis noticed a German pre-POW sitting on the ground reading an American comic book. And he thought he understood English. And the look of astonishment on this German officer that a private would tell an American general to stay in place while it directed traffic, just blew him away. And I think what Sturgis said to me was that The Great Escape was about how Allied ingenuity beat the Germans, who were so kind of stiff and stuck in their ways, whereas the Americans, the British, the Australians, the French, whatever, they used their noggins and they put their ingenuity together to beat the German war machine. And The Great Escape demonstrates what that collective intelligence did to disrupt the Germans. And over the years, they've done huge studies on the fact that the German officer command was not encouraged to think on their own. They had to follow orders at all costs. And I think that The Great Escape is not only a tribute to the spirit of man to find freedom, but kind of as a dichotomy of how we beat the Germans and how we won the war.
Wow. Actually, when you were discussing right now about Sturgis' experiences during the war, it reminded me of the miniseries from a few years back called Five Came Back. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that's about the directors who worked in World War II.
Yes. So my first thought was, oh, maybe Sturgis was one of the five. And then I went to go look, and he's not one of the five. So
No.
An interesting tidbit of the sixth, I guess you can say, because there we have John Huston, John Ford, Frank Capra, William Wyler, and George Stevens.
Yeah, Sturgis was definitely a peer, and he was associated with MGM when he came back from the war. I think he was under contract to MGM, and his first movies were MGM. I think Bad Day at Black Rock was one of his first breakout movies. That was MGM. And, of course,
that was actually the only movie he was nominated for Best Director at the Oscars for.
Interesting. I guess for The Great Escape, the only nomination the movie got was for...
For film editing.
Sorry, film editing. You're absolutely right.
Yes, film editing by Fapp, right? Was it Fapp? Or was Fapp the cinematographer?
Fapp was the cameraman.
No, Fapp was the cameraman. So it was... What was his name? Ferris Webster, sorry.
Ferris Webster, exactly.
Yeah, which I heard that I might have even been on the commentary that he was basically nominated for the scene of putting Bud Elkins and McQueen together for the jump.
for The Jump.
You know, the way that the way that he was able to put it together, where it's seamless. You can't really tell where it's McQueen and where it's not.
Right.
And who knows? Nope. Maybe it was entirely McQueen, and we'll never know.
Well, I think we know that Eakins did The Jump because he recognized himself. But whereas some people said Steve McQueen did The Jump, Steve McQueen did do The Jump. He just didn't do The Jump they filmed.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, this has been a fascinating week. You've inspired me more. You've given me so much more insight into this movie, even though I've heard your commentary. I've heard, you know, just commentary. I've heard everything. But, you know, we still had new things for me to learn this week. And hopefully our listeners have learned so many fascinating new tidbits about this movie this week. So I want to once again thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to, you know, or all week, to come and join us and talk about this movie. It's really been an honor talking to you.
Well, Rob, thank you for reaching out to me. And I just love this movie, every aspect of it. It's been fun going over it minute by minute with you.
All right. I appreciate that. Thank you. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. I have three Facebook pages. One is called just plain old Steve Rubin, R-U-B-I-N. Then I have Steve Rubin's Saturday Night at the Movies, where I each week publish a review of a classic film. And then I also have the James Bond Movie Encyclopedia based on my book, which is currently available in its fourth edition, which includes information on No Time to Die, the newest James Bond movie.
All right. Excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. You can go join our Facebook group, The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. And our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. So once again, thank you, Steve. Like I said, this has been very educational and a lot of fun.
For me as well. Thank you, Rob.
All right. And until next week, tally-ho.
Tally-ho!